forcing sacrifice. But we will meet again when our stories end, and we will gather there in the world of love and care. Ali Young, you see how your soul is free, free from pain and strife, the pain of sacrifice. Ali Young, you see this world will always be a much darker place without that smile upon your face.
That was beautiful. Ali Young, God bless you. Moving on to Non-Human Radio, and they're in the house. So thank you for listening to KZFR, and until next week, Without a Roof, signing off.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star Pizza features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live jazz on Wednesday and Thursday and Sundays. Located at 2359 The Esplanade, visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by Raw Tree Care and Preservation for all your residential or commercial needs. With over 15 years of experience, Raw Tree Care services include pruning, removal, planting, bobcat and tractor work, chipping, fire abatement, crane and emergency services, and custom wood milling. Raw Tree Care is locally owned and operated, accepts all forms of insurance work, and can be reached at 321-4576 or by email at rawtree@gmail.com. This is KZFR 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM. We're streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we'll be talking about a few reasons why border walls are bad. There are many reasons. A new vegan lifestyle magazine in South Africa, an end to animal-based cosmetics testing in India, and finally, an entrepreneurial college class dedicated to making vegan meat. Over to you, Jeannie.
According to an article in the Washington Post by reporter Teek Root, border walls are bad for wildlife. In 1996, Botswana erected an 83-mile-long fence along its border with Namibia. The goal was to protect domestic cattle from the highly contagious foot and mouth disease. So this wall was erected for protection of the cattle industry, basically, as small as it probably was in Botswana.
Different country, same problems.
Within a year, the barrier had snared 5 giraffes, one elephant, several antelope, and numerous other wild animals. In the 20 years since, border barriers have proliferated to unprecedented levels, and as we know, they became one of Donald Trump's favorite talking points. But while attention is focused on the human consequences of a more bordered world, the effect on wildlife is also dramatic. So as you may have heard, we have all heard, President Trump has proposed sealing off the U.S.-Mexico frontier with a great expansion of the current wall, which now spans about 650 miles of a total 2,000-mile southern border. The existing wall is already harming animals. Bison along the border fence have been spotted trying to climb over the barbed wire fencing to get to food and water. And according to a 2011 study, 16 species in California have had as much as 75% of their range blocked by the wall. According to the study's author, Jesse Lasky, who is a Penn State University biologist, completing a barrier that's impregnable for animals would be a really major problem for them. Such a wall could affect more than 111 endangered species and 108 migratory bird species, according to a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service provisional report on the topic. In another part of the world, a border study looked at Slovenia in Eastern Europe. For about a year now, Slovenia has been fencing its border with Croatia in an attempt to block an influx of refugees that the government fears could morph into an outright humanitarian catastrophe. So far, over 100 miles of barbed and razor wire fencing have been erected along one-third of the frontier. A slew of mangled animal carcasses, especially deer, have been found in, on, or around what are labeled temporary technical obstacles. Slaven Reljic, a co-author of this study, found that of 33 radio-collared brown bears, 16 cross in between the two countries, right? They don't recognize this national border. Another co-author of the study reported that she observed similar movements among wolves, right? These are wild predators with big ranges. They don't recognize national borders. So it's clear to these biologists that conservation success for large carnivore populations in Slovenia is dependent on transboundary connectivity. The researchers believe that lynx are most at risk. The lynx population hovers at around 20 animals in that area and is in danger of local extinction within the next decade. And habitat fragmentation by a wall would speed up the extinction process. Today, the number of barriers around the world is at an all-time high, said Elizabeth Vallée, author of the book Borders, Fences, and Walls, State of Insecurity. Although the flood of displaced people in Europe and illegal immigration to the United States have contributed to an increasing number of barriers, she points to the late 1990s as the beginnings of the proliferation, when rapid globalization helped revive nationalist sentiments. The 9/11 terrorist attacks drastically accelerated the trend, and by 2010, she found that 45 new walls had gone up from Morocco to India, totaling 18,000 miles in length. A related study highlighted a few ways walls intended to keep people out have inadvertently aided animals, such as an Israeli-constructed barrier that helped shield endangered Israeli gazelle from Palestinian hunters in the West Bank. But overall, concludes the report, in the great majority of instances, the impact is negative. So I just wanted to just present that as sort of just this additional spin on, right, on walls and borders, and that animals live here too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and they, you mentioned earlier about, you know, habitat fragmentation. If you just think about the levels of kind of ecological devastation that come along with civilization, where, you know, first the forests go, and then the fences go up, and then the roads go in, and then the pollution goes in, and now we're going to take that little piecemeal devastated piece of land anyway, and we're going to put a big wall through the middle of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that around here, out here in rural area, right? How many, unfortunately, dead raccoons do we see on the side of the road simply because we don't build a simple underpass or tunnel under? And it's just pretty devastating to the ecosystem, especially, obviously, you know, the more endangered animals that do roam, and walls mean nothing to them. And for the record, this wall is useless and preying on people's fear. So, yeah.
Well, very good. Thanks. Thanks for that input. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that our highways and rails and all are part of our footprint. All right.
I think we saw, like, in Southern California, maybe, or maybe it was in, near Santa Cruz, they finally built sort of an underpass and overpass to kind of let the cougars get through. There's been a few places where they're recognizing and trying to correct for it, but obviously building things in a more accessible way to begin with.
And that assumes whether you actually, you know, take into consideration the animals in the first place, right?
Right.
Like, if you're just looking at it as a human political problem, you're never going to look at the non-human animal impact.
Yeah. Most of these walls are purely political problems. They don't solve anything.
But they build jobs.
Yeah, right.
All right. Next.
We'll point out other notable walls in history. Hadrian's Wall, built to keep the Scots out of England, away from the Romans. Well, the Romans aren't around anymore. I don't know the name of the Chinese dynasty that built and maintained the Great Wall, but they went out of business because they could not afford to maintain that wall and the troops upon it over hundreds and hundreds of years. It's not sustainable. So we might build this wall, we might go broke doing it. We're never going to pay to keep it up to date. It's not like it's a static cost, you know?
Exactly.
It's not like criminals don't have ladders, you know?
Or are able to dig tunnels.
Yes. Oh, all right.
It's you next, Danny.
Over to myself. They call me Danny. Media 24 launches a new magazine called The Vegan Life Magazine in South Africa. So this magazine is titled The Vegan Life. It's in South Africa. I've said that twice. It has debuted. It aims to give readers everything they need to know about veganism, as well as to address other kind of related issues like pet ownership.
Which we haven't even talked about on this show very much, except
right.
to say that if you value your dog or cat as a non-human animal, as an animal that you can relate to, that same applies to cows, pigs,
right.
and other critters.
Subtitled Ethical Eating for Plant-Nourished People, which I kind of like that name, Plant-Nourished People. The Vegan Life offers advice from a South African registered dietitian named Jessica Kotlowitz. We'll go with that. It has information about how to start on a 21-day vegan challenge, over 30 vegan recipes, food lists of what to eat, and a tried and tested guide to the best vegan restaurants in Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, and Pretoria. I kind of want to visit South Africa now. The magazine's published by Media 24, which is a leading media company in Africa with interests in newspaper magazines and book publishing. So I think that's pretty cool. I know you've been involved sort of in the magazine industry to some extent, right, Jeannie?
Yeah, I cut my teeth on animal rights and the magazine publishing industry back in the mid-'80s.
Awesome.
Late 80s with an animal rights magazine called the Animal's Voice magazine, which still exists. It's just in digital form, but you can go to animalsvoice.org, I think, is where mm-hmm. she runs it at. But I think magazines have a certain value. I mean, a digital magazine is one thing, a website is one thing, but there's something about a magazine that is big enough to share, and two people can read it at one time, and
it's shiny.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I think maybe they're making a comeback because we kind of went through a loss of traditional paper media with the digital age, but now you get your news through Facebook, you get interrupted with news through Facebook, and you get these short snippets of stuff. Even being on the computer trying to read an online magazine, you're getting distracted by something else. So
yeah.
there's a lot to be said for, and they're typically written as clickbait, as short synopses, and having a nice sit down magazine exploring a variety of topics is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I think that this news was significant to me. Well, one, because I love magazines, but two, I think it just shows that urban areas. And I'm going to say it's probably more of an urban thing than a rural thing. All over the world are seeing a growth in veganism,
mm-hmm.
right? This publishing company isn't a vegan publishing company, but they saw it as a niche market.
Right.
Young people probably, looking for more information.
Right. And you can leave magazines places. You're not going to leave your iPhone around for somebody to read your articles.
Yet another advantage of old-fashioned paper technology.
Yeah, I think Driftwood Magazine is a good one that just came out here in the States. Some of our friends, are involved in that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, I did a little bit of research, and there's quite a few going on right now of varying levels of circulation. But Veg News is the main magazine on vegan issues. There's a magazine called Leica, which is a travel and style magazine. You won't get too many recipes in Leica, but you'll get, like, good-looking coats and shoes and things like that, fashion stuff. Vegan Health and Fitness, of course, the health industry is sort of underlying a lot of vegan activity. Chickpea, which is a quarterly about vegan food, but not healthy vegan food necessarily.
Oh, I like this one. In writing. I'll have to get that one.
And then Tofu Magazine was publishing on a regular basis. They're out of Vancouver, Canada. And now they're intermittently publishing on a sort of quarterly basis. But they were very, very good, very introspective, meditative pieces on veganism and animal rights, as well as how that intersects with feminism and ageism and sizeism.
Right. And I think that's what a lot of some of the newer magazines are doing. It's less just, you know, articles about granola. You don't have to use deodorant if you don't want to or whatever. And more intersectional and making, you know, veganism is sort of an ethical choice. I guess we call it a lifestyle. I don't like that because, I don't know, it rubs me the wrong way. But, you know, sort of a moral imperative. And vegans are people too. And we also like to travel and wear nice clothes and have whole well-rounded lives within that context. So, yeah, cool.
Very good. Yeah, and I just want to point out, if anybody wants to go read the back issues of a magazine called Satya, S-A-T-Y-A, that magazine was published out of New York City for, I don't know, probably a decade. And it had some really fine, fine writing.
Right.
Very incisive, looking at the world incisively in terms of animal exploitation, but also looking inward and looking at, you know, just what are we doing when an animal rights organization promotes humane farming methods or humane farming certification programs. Just what are we doing there? So, Satya Magazine, we miss you.
They went out of business about a year after I had subscribed. So.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So we're going on to, we're doing a little world. I had to look outward for this week's show. So we're going to look at India making some headway here. In a major victory for animal rights campaigners, the Union Health Ministry of India has prohibited the use of cruel and obsolete DRAISE irritation tests that involve using rabbits.
So DRAISE is just sort of the name of the test, or maybe the guy that invented it
Yes, it's the name of the man who invented it about 70 years ago. It was a test to measure eye and skin irritation.
I'm sure technology and science hasn't changed in 70 years.
No, not at all. This technique involved locking rabbits in restraints, so like a stocks type thing, while a test chemical is applied to one eye or to the shaved skin on their backs. And then the rabbits are monitored for about 2 weeks without pain relief for signs of chemical damage to their skin or their eye, which includes swelling, ulceration, bleeding, and blindness. It's not a nice test. It turns out not even to be particularly useful for determining human responses. So, you know, so something like shampoo, right, would be placed in a rabbit's eye.
Horrific, really.
So, this move in India comes after the Union Minister for Women and Child Development, a lady named Maneka Gandhi, wrote to the ministry regarding the practice and followed it up with presentations by Humane Society International, asking for an end to this obsolete and cruel technique as it does not provide reliable or even relevant information for safe human use. And she was quoted as saying, "This is an historic decision by the health ministry. Thousands of rabbits will now be spared from one of the most cruel and infamous experiments on rabbits known to mankind." This, in addition to the cosmetic testing ban passed in India in 2014, will provide the much-needed impetus for India to move towards more humane and advanced 21st century science. We laud the health ministry for acting swiftly to notify the real change and hope that the companies follow this in letter and spirit. This was the Deputy Director of the Humane Society International India. So, the ministry notification mandates the use of what's called the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development validated non-animal alternatives. So some of these alternatives include using reconstructed human skin and corneal tissues and these have been available for years.
Do you know what that means? What is a reconstructed skin? Is this like cadaver skin? Or
I think
like
some
simulations?
Of it's cadaver skin, but there's also, they can culture skin from...
Oh, that's right. You can just culture things these days.
Yeah, so...
Would you like some cheese or some skin?
So these 21st century technologies are deployed as part of a sequential testing strategy, allow for complete replacement of the Dreyer's eyes and skin test with methods that are more reproducible and reflective of human responses. So instead of measuring how long it takes a chemical to burn the cornea of a rabbit's eye, manufacturers can now drop that chemical onto a cornea-like 3D tissue structure produced from human cells. And likewise, human skin cultures can be grown and purchased for skin irritation testing. And there's a whole field of in vitro, and they also call it in silico, so computer modeling, that make testing much more efficient because modern products are not just one ingredient, right? So there can be combinations of like one product with another product that create like an even more severe reaction. Mm-hmm. So computer modeling lets you actually predict better.
Think
than
that through. It's kind of the don't mix ammonia and bleach cleaning your bathroom and you'll die. So don't do it, listeners.
Yeah. So, So and you know, people may not be aware. You may be aware that, you know, about what vegan food is, but you may not be aware of the animal impact of some of your household products and cosmetics that you might be buying.
Yeah. What is it? The Leaping Bunny logo on most non-food products? For your
cruelty-free health and beauty and cleaning products,
right? And so you'll see this. I mean, if you think about just all of the, you know, shampoo in a Target or a Walmart, all the different products, and how many of them are not cruelty-free. It's a very simple choice to make as a consumer, and these products now have been established. These cruelty-free ones are typically the same price. And they also usually don't, you know, make you smell crazy. They're not overly scented. I guess that's my pet peeves. That's irrelevant to this. But it's definitely out there. It's mainstream now. And yeah, it's not just, I think, you know, there's probably whole shows we can do on animal testing, not just medical testing and cosmetics testing. Lots of things go through animal testing that's frequently needless. Like we said here, this test's been around 70 years. They're probably still using it in the U.S. Bureaucracies are hard to change. There's not often a monetary incentive to change these things, but... it's just sort of repetitive cruelty that needs to stop.
And one way you can stop is just by changing your buying habits a little bit. So yeah, look for that Leaping Bunny logo. There's a site called logicalharmony.net, which is just a dedicated woman who tests and checks with different manufacturers repeatedly and updates her list on cruelty-free products. And she also goes to the trouble of telling you which ones are vegan. Because cruelty-free doesn't necessarily mean vegan.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, so Leaping Bunny logo, you'll find it at Target, at Ulta, that new makeup shop over there by Costco, and at Sephora, and also just at most drugstores. So, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Over to you, Danny.
All right. On our next story, Veg News Magazine, one of the cool magazines we previously mentioned, and the San Francisco Chronicle reports on a first-of-its-kind program to encourage students to develop meat alternatives, a plant-based meat entrepreneur class. So the world's first semester-long college course on plant-based meat has been launched this year at UC Berkeley. Created in partnership with food advocacy strategy firm The Good Food Institute, where some of our friends work, and the UC Berkeley Sutarja Center for Entrepreneurship and Technology, also known as the Challenge Lab, which is much easier to pronounce, has teams of students developing strategies for creating a new plant-based foods with the help of lectures from industry experts, including Impossible Foods advisor Michael Eisen and former Madeleine Bistro chef David Anderson.
Did you ever go to the Madeleine Bistro?
I did not.
It was a great little restaurant in the San Fernando Valley that was completely vegan, but you would be hard-pressed to find the word vegan anywhere on the menu.
Yeah, Impossible Foods is making the Impossible Burger, which actually has heme in it and iron in it and kind of very closely resembles meat. So they're doing good work there. At the lab's second gathering, there were no tofurkey samples on hand, alas, but instead Christy Legale, a senior scientist with the Good Food Institute, gave the students a PowerPoint crash course on the reasons the world needs more meat substitutes. So Factory farming allows us to have an affluence of meat, she told them, which we all know is true. There's meat everywhere, and it's really cheap. That doesn't make sense. According to her figures, animal agriculture produces up to 24% of greenhouse gases, uses water and energy more intensively than plant agriculture, and kills 9 billion land animals and 47 billion sea animals each year just to satisfy American diets.
That's a lot of death.
Gluttony, yeah. Ricardo San Martin, a chemical engineering professor who leads the class, says that the ethical complexity of the subject makes it ideal for the challenge lab. In last semester's exercise, students came up with ways to bring economic vitality back to the Greek island of Lesbos, which has thousands of refugees, for example. Atisha Lewis, a business major who's been a vegetarian for 14 years, said that she was, quote, really interested in how to make a plant-based diet accessible to working-class people, which is
Hallelujah.
Very important. Yes. And people from underserved communities. Social entrepreneurship is needed to help people who shop at corner stores and small groceries find inexpensive, healthful meat substitutes and kind of avoid the whole food desert situation.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure that our friends at the Food Empowerment Project are very interested in that.
Yeah, so it's all good stuff. I mean, you know, the youth is our future, even though it's a bit, feels weird to say things like that.
What, does it make you feel old?
Eh.
Or just hackneyed?
Hackneyed. And, you know, and you get this now, you know, getting this at Berkeley, you're getting, this is both an interesting ethical thing for students. It's an interesting technological problem. Let's use these guys' minds to build interesting things other than more software, even though, you know, I like software, right? I think we're hitting the wall here a little bit. So I think it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar events, Jeannie.
Yep. I'll just give you some highlights. And this one, I'll go ahead and just post the links for some of these events on our Non-Human Radio Facebook page. So tonight, urgent, if you're free, head on over to the Winchester Goose. They're doing the Butte Humane Society Supper Club. And they are serving up vegan macaroni and cheese from 5 to 9, and 15% of the sales will be donated to help all the kitties and puppies at the Humane Society.
Yeah, it looked like a delicious recipe and picture I saw. I'm going to be heading over there.
Yeah, the Winchester Goose is located at 800 Broadway in downtown Chico. And let's see, what else do we have? Well, the other thing I want to point out, I remind our high schoolers that the Vegetarian Resource Group scholarship applications for vegetarian and vegan activists, those scholarships are due on February 20th, and you can get up to a $10,000 scholarship for a simple essay.
$10,000.
You can get information at the Vegetarian Resource Group website at www.vrg.org. And what else? The other thing I want to say is heads up for June. The Animal Place has its Farmed Animal Conference on the weekend of June 2nd. Through June 4th, and their keynote speaker just got confirmed today. It's Carol J. Adams, the feminist vegan advocate who wrote The Sexual Politics of Meat. That should be just a dynamic, amazing talk.
She's super famous.
Yeah, and then also Ryan Shapiro, who is a FOIA expert, using it to counteract the mainstream. He will be giving a talk on the use of the Freedom of Information Act to resist exploitation and oppression. If you have an event or other news to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. And if you have suggestions for show topics, have at it. So we have one last bit of business to take care of. Danny, go for it.
Here's a quote from Mary Tyler Moore, who sadly passed away at the great age of 80 last week. Our listeners may not know that in addition to being a famous entertainer, she was a longtime vegetarian and volunteered some of her time to both Farm Sanctuary and PETA. In 2001, she even sponsored the Great American Meat Out to show the public how to eat healthfully without including meat. She wrote in her biography, quote, I'm convinced there will come a time when we look back and say, can you believe that people used to eat animals? A human being has been given an intellect to make choices, and we know that there are other food sources that do not require the killing of a creature that would protest being killed.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand and Bill Mash for their engineering assistance and moral support. Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. here on KZFR is one of those standout days for local public affairs programming in this area. Stay tuned for her show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, please visit the archives at KZFR.org and search for Non-Human Radio. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Tom signing off.
Be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.